How would you like to make an impact in your community? How would you like to help someone that you know who's been a victim of some type of trauma? Well, maybe it's domestic violence or something a little bit more traumatic. Retired police officer and domestic violence expert Rebecca L. Mahan created a program that has been so successful that lives have dramatically changed and people have been able to overcome significant trauma. The book, Victims Overcoming Traumatic Events, is available on Amazon and is designed for patrol officers and those who respond first to domestic violence. That includes you. You might be responding to a friend or a family member that's had to, face a very challenging situation that has been very traumatic for them. Domestic violence or otherwise, the focus of the book really gives details that can be applied to any type of calls for service. And those who are patrol officers, nurses, and family or friends can really utilize the tools and resources that are provided inside to make a difference. There's even a chapter how you can change unhealthy things going on in your life to make them healthy and move forward. Take a few minutes to head over on Amazon.com, Victims Overcoming Traumatic Events by Rebecca L. Mahan.
We're excited to have you here today because in 30 minutes, we're going to give you points that are going to change your life or your perspective to make your life healthier. With us today, we have a guest who is a novelist and a playwright. He's been featured in national media from the New York Times, Entertainment Weekly, Parade Magazine, the New York Post, Sports Illustrated to NPR. He's an award-winning playwright, and his stage dramas include A Black and White Cookie, The Broadway World, A Tomato Can't Grow in the Bronx. I've got to actually ask more about that. But with his latest work, Walking Charlie, he's also got 7 critically acclaimed dystopian political thrillers to his name. And I would like to welcome him, and I hope that he is welcome in your hearts too with us today. Gary Morgenstein, welcome. How are you?
Thank you, Rebecca. Hello, everyone. Thank you. Thank you for having me on and listening.
I am absolutely excited to have you here today to share with us some things that are going on in your world. And while you have so much to offer the audience, let's just start with the first bullet point and see where we go from there. So tell me, what's the first thing on your mind that you'd like to share with our audience?
Well, since May 2015, I've been working on, I finally finished my dystopian political trilogy, which starts in 2098. After America and the West have lost World War III to the Islamic Empire, democracy is dead. If anyone wonders about that, the Gallup poll this week showed only 28% think democracy is working. Religion's outlawed. And America is run by this entity called the family, led by grandma. And it's a totalitarian nanny state. And things like social media are outlawed under the anti-narcissism laws. And within this dystopian despair comes the fact that baseball, representing the last of America, the America's national pastime, the great America, the disgraced baseball, is going to play its final season at Amazon Stadium in the Bronx, which used to be Yankee Stadium, which is where I grew up, which is why I talk like this. And so baseball becomes the epicenter of the resistance. And it's about ordinary people who become extraordinary heroes. There's no elitists, no one gets trained to help save the world. You have a baseball historian, you have a teacher, you have someone who runs a boutique shoe store, you have a Catholic priest, you have an orphan girl who escapes abuse at an Islamic orphanage in Barcelona, and they come together, and it's based on faith. Not necessarily faith in a specific religion, or even God. There's that as well. But okay, faith in ourselves and each other to show a way forward.
I really like that. I think that you've got some really, really neat tie-ins here, because there's some things that are very plausible. And one of the things that you mentioned, Amazon Stadium, Amazon is taking over. And on so many levels. I mean, they're even doing telehealth now. So it's crazy to think what it would be like to advance forward to 2038.
Well, the thing is about dystopian novels is you have to create your own world, which is the hard part, okay? You have your own world with your own rules and you can't disobey it. But it's not meant to be predictive. And it's not meant to, okay, I mean, that's the most important thing. There's never any mention of contemporary politics, for example, or, you know, the three terms of President Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Kidding. Just kidding. I just want to see if everyone's paying attention. So it's not that scary, okay? But you want to be able to see how the world could become like this and the world could become dark. And I think we increasingly see how America is losing its will to fight for freedom, to believe in freedom, to bolster and maintain its democratic institutions. You could see how we could lose a world war. Not to denigrate at all. The men and women are armed forces, but the political will to fight. And I try to show that. We could certainly see why religion would be outlawed in this country. Religion, you know, Judeo-Christianity is completely under attack here and across the world. So that's what I want to show. And then I want to show a new world and how these people go about it and how they go to change it. When my book, the end of book two and beginning of book three, the government is beginning to collapse. And as the American government, the system is beginning to collapse, so is the caliphate. So is the Grand Mufti. The rule now, Sharia has ruled the world. Pretty much, there's a few neutral countries, like China is neutral, but for the most part, we're surrounded and we have to fend for ourselves. But Islam has never had a reformation, a renaissance, a thinking, a looking and examining the laws, like Christianity, like Judaism. And so in the Islamic Empire, there starts to be glimmerings of people saying, well, what, we want more freedom. And baseball ironically triggers that as well, until it comes together in the 2099 World Series, which is a real World Series, with the fate of the world at stake.
Well, there's a lot that is actually tied to or evolves around sports and how it connects in a lot of these other areas. So I really think it's exciting how all of that has been brought together in what you have been sharing. And I mean, I do really feel excited to hear about the other possibilities. And I think why this is important now is because if this is at all possible, if it's plausible, we need to be thinking about what we're doing now, such like the time when people started saying, hey, wait a minute, we're seeing too many, I don't know, plastics sort of be embedded in these different areas. And we need to come to a solution that will alleviate that problem for our health. And people started adapting ways to do that, whether it was through recycling, ocean cleanup, whatever scale that it has actually culminated to now. We need to think in those terms now about what's happening and where we would like to see things in our future, because I've got to tell you, Gary, I don't know about you, but I can sit here today after we stop talking and think, did X amount of time actually just go by? Am I really this age? This was too quick. I can't even imagine that we're talking about 2038 when I was a kid. If we were talking about that, we would think that that was so far off the spectrum, but it's not. Time goes by so quickly. And so, all right, let's go into point number two. I can't wait to hear what else you've got to share, because there's really, really a lot of exciting things that you have.
Well, also it's the role of the artist. And artist, I don't mean to sound too precious, the writer, someone who creates. And for thousands of years, what we've done is hold up a mirror to society and say, you've got to address this. And sometimes it's anger. But I think in these polarized times, just to segue, because I often do, you talk about thinking. We're losing the ability to think in our society, Rebecca. For the first time in generations, IQ scores have dropped. That's terrifying. Reading comprehension scores are down to the lowest level since, I think, 1990, math to 1970, which means that this generation of students are not as smart as the previous generation, which flies in the face of what civilization should be about. So how do we, as writers and as entertainers, how do we reach people? You don't point the finger and say, oh, you voted for, you believe in. What you must do, first of all, is create characters who are flawed, who are like people. The most underrepresented demographic in American society are human beings. Forget the hyphenations. Okay,
that we all have hyphenations,
right? But we are many things, but not people. We're not viewed as people because the elite, the politicians, the media, they gain nothing out of us all, you know, grabbing our pitchforks and saying, oh, wait a second. That they don't want that. They don't want people to come together. So what I try to do is, even when I have characters whom I don't agree with, okay, whose point of views, for example, I disagree vehemently with, it's incumbent upon me, it's not up to me to say they're bad. It's up to you to say, you know, as the reader, as the viewer, to decide what they're like. And you must be honest, because we've also reached a point where you can no longer explain something, because if you explain something, you're accused of agreeing. It's like, no, wait, well, you know, how did Trump win in 2016? Oh, yeah, for Trump. You know, people lose their minds, right? But you can't have reasoned discussions. So writers, we have to create characters who might offend people, not purposely. I don't believe in gratuity like that. But so we see everyone with all shades. But then to show ultimately that there's no finger pointing, there's no accusations, we have to show through the darkness. And right now we are in dark times, that there's a light. And that's what artists must do. And that's what I try to do in my novels and my plays.
I can totally agree with what you're saying. I think that one of the things that is often overlooked is people are people. And so while there's so many people that are rising up to voice their opinions about whatever it is, there's still so many people that have their own set of opinions, and being respectful of that is not happening, whereas it should. Everybody should be able to have freedom of speech and be able to say, and have a choice of opinion on what they want. I think the manner is how. And going back to supporting what you talked about as far as the education level, there was studies done before COVID. And for many years, the average American education level is ninth grade.
That's pretty scary, and isn't it?
Yes, but what's even scary is what the study that was done after COVID. And that was, they were finding people were at a sixth grade reading level, so, and education level. So that just supports what you have to say. And technology is such an advantage to us, and we use it, and it sort of takes away sort of a learning curve that is really necessary in our life, that is more harmful than it is not. For example, AI. I know that it was developed for a lot of reasons, and it's been really effective for a lot of people in the things that they're doing with their businesses or social media or whatever it is. But when you look at the grand scope of what is going to culminate from that, it's a scary thought. All right. So we've got to move to your third point. And I am really excited because there's so much more that you and I could talk about. And I want to go into so many things now. But I know we're limited for time. So do tell me, what is the third thing that we can talk about with the audience and share with them?
Well, the fact, by the way, you mentioned AI. So in my novels, America becomes so complacent, almost like the Roman Empire, and that the World War III resumes against the Islamic Empire, but they'd rather the robot armies fight. They don't want to fight anymore. And I think, you see the ease, which I try to show, that people will give up their responsibilities. And I think what we must have is more individual responsibility. But with individual responsibility comes the possibility of failure. And we're not challenged enough, right? It's not, you know, it would be nice if everyone had the same equal, abilities, but I was never able to be a Major League Baseball player. I would have loved to have been a Major League Baseball player. I didn't have the talent. I have the will, and I hustled, but not, we all have our skills, and we have to accept that we have our skills, but we also have things we can't do. And I think we've reached a point in our society where the questions of merit are being degraded, and that's really bad. Sometimes you're going to fail, and you're not going to get, a 98, but we're doing away with grading. We're doing away with what kind of standards we hold our children up to, and it seems to be, in the woke culture, well, that protects people. No, it makes them, it makes people, whoever you're trying to protect from failure, not willing to take the step, because all great inventions, all great moments come from hard work. People say to me, oh boy, I'd love to write a novel. I have a great idea. I say, well, yeah, are you willing to do all the hard work? Do you know, I mean, my last novel, A Dug Out to Peace, in manuscript form, was 910 pages. It's a long sucker, It was originally, it's originally supposed to be a four book series. And the publisher said, we really prefer trilogies. I say, well, then book four is going to be a lot bigger than you thought. Well, I did 9 drafts of that.
9?
Yes. That's a little, maybe a little neurotic, but also I feel that my name's on it. And also the reader, if someone is spending money and spending time to read my book or spending money on a ticket to come see my play, they deserve the best.
Agreed. Okay. I agree with you. There is nothing like the mind of a person who puts their imagination on paper. Yes. And everything that is being brought through AI is just a compilation of different things that have come from different places over time. But your originality, your passion, the things that you want to evoke in someone's senses can be done through yourself and not relying on a computer. So I agree with
you. Well, and yourself. Again, that's it. Because I have my creativity, okay? But you do exactly as you said. You do want to spark in other people. Look, you read a book, all right? And I describe some character. Well, the way I see it isn't the way you're going to see it. Your blue is not my blue, right? And I could describe a mountain at night. You're going to have a totally different background, but you have to think about it. And that's what we have to do. But we are so worried in our society now about offending people. It goes down to humor. The very basis of humor is you're making fun of someone, a pie in the face. Now, you don't have to be vicious, okay? There's a line to be crossed. But you go back to like old school comedians, the 30s and 40s and 50s and 60s, they didn't swear. They didn't talk about drugs or alcohol or sex. It was stories about the human foibles. And those are the best movies. And you also see this reflected in movies. Hollywood box office attendance has dropped since 2019, 20%. It's not just COVID. People want to see stories about people. And you just because that's who you identify with, whether it's a movie, a book, right?
Oh, that's what I was just going to say. If you can identify with it, I think that, that's really, you're capturing, you're encapsulating life experience.
Yes.
And what's really neat about that, and I think we forget this oftentimes and why it's so important to develop relationships, because we all go through certain things. We all, despite no matter what we look like on the outside, we're wired as people and we have emotions and perceptions, and we're going to feel a lot of things. Oftentimes, we kind of feel like we're the outsider, that we're riding solo when we don't have support or an understanding that somebody else has gone through what we have, and that there are resources out there or other people who can empathize with what we're saying. So this is, I think, super important. I can tell you that not too long ago, I got to be a screener for a film festival, and it was exciting because that took me to a place to be able to ask myself a lot of questions. What's the writer trying to convey? What am I seeing? And what am I like? There was just so many different things that made me think through what I was watching. And yes, there's times we can just sit and we want the TV on, or we want to watch a movie just to sort of escape.
Sure.
But how much is it when you can really get into something and figure out what the writer is trying to convey, just like what you're doing? I love this.
Yes. And people, and you talk about, and we so underestimate our ability to identify with people who are not us. One of my plays, Tomato Can't Grow in the Bronx, it's about a Jewish working class family in the 1960s. And when we would have talkbacks after the performances, it was a very, you know, mixed crowd. I mean, you know, all different people, races and ethnicities and religions. And people say, well, that was like my father. Well, my grandmother was like that. You know, and that's what we need to do. We need to, as I said before, reinforce that. And you have to reinforce, but you have to be open and you have to be honest. When you read a book, it should be designed, or a play, a movie, as if, you know, you're eavesdropping. You're seeing, you go to a theater and you see people there on stage. You're not seeing them when their guard is up, right? You're seeing them when their guard is down. But we learn. We learn how people struggle and go through the things that we all go through, different in different manifestations, but, you know, similar things, and how they get through it. But you want it to be positive at the end. You want to give people hope. You don't want to call them names, okay? And I think that's really, it's really important to show that there could be friendship in a black and white cookie, which, as you said, thank you. That's my dog. I'm sorry. Won a Broadway World for Best Original Play. And it's about the relationship between an African-American conservative newsstand owner and an eccentric communist Jew, who have nothing in common, so they think. But they learn that despite their differences, they come together because they're two lonely old guys and they want a friend. And that's it. It doesn't get much more complicated than that, right?
I absolutely love that. I think that what you're saying is so on par. And I know that you have just so much more to share and be able to give people some food for thought, and then also allow them to identify with, again, start thinking about the identification and where we're at, because I think there's just been such a big separation. I am so glad that you were able to share some of your time with us today and talk about these things, because I think that they're all very important and very succinct, and they're applicable to what could be, and this is where you're at right now. So I'd like for you to share with the audience how they can get involved with what you've got going and be able to go into another place and see what could be and how they might be able to make a significant difference.
Well, my novels are A Mound Over Hell, which was called 1984 Meets Shoeless Joe, and A Fastball for Freedom, which was called The Dystopian Field of Dreams, and A Dugout to Peace, which was like, I think they call it Powerful and Imaginative. And you could get them at Amazon and Barnes & Noble and wherever fine books are sold. And you could read about them more at my publisher's site, bhcpress.com. Okay. And I'm on Facebook, I guess, as me. I never know when you say, isn't it just your name and Instagram, your name and Gary Morgenstein, and then Twitter at, you know, at Writer Gary.
I love it. Thank you so much for your time with us today. And I want to thank all of you who are watching and listening out there. And you can find us all over. And if you have questions or you have suggestions, we want to hear about it. Rebecca Mahan at publicist.com is where you can send any information you'd like. And you'll find me, Rebecca L. Mahan, all over social media. Thanks for tuning in today.